Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Founders Grid, sponsored by Gabor.io. Today we have Ben, Michael, Will. So who wants to go first? Let's go with Ben.
Good morning. My name is Ben Stewart. I am a program officer at the George Kaiser Family Foundation and also the interim director at 36 Degrees, or at Tulsa Remote.
I'm Michael Bosch. I lead Atento Capital, an early stage VC and fund that focuses on not just returns, but also diversity and inclusively job creating in Tulsa.
And hi, I'm Will Gray. I head up the investment team at Atento Capital, focused on fund investments and direct deals.
Okay, good. So coming down to, let's starting off with Will, you know, so if we go through the whole pandemic landscape in the last 6-7 months since COVID started, you know, so end of March, start of April, the conversations that we were having or seeing was that, you know, the VCs are rethinking their investment thesis, you know, the term sheets are not getting honored, you know, and even conversation going on, if you're not into telehealth, there's no point of doing a startup, right? But if you look at the data of September, the VC funding has been at all-time high. So when it comes down to your own opinions, how has it changed over the last 6 months? Whatever you predicted in March, do you think you kind of like achieved that, or you went through a different learning curve?
Yeah, so I think our original thought was that activity was going to slow down, and I think it did to some extent take a little bit of a pause, especially as institutional capital thought through asset allocation. But I do think that the activity really kind of picked up. This is a very disruptive time and a lot of new interesting business models are kind of emerging, and you know, there is a lot of capital in the world to be put to work. And so that capital is finding homes in some very interesting businesses today.
Got it. So which brings me, Michael, I have a question for you in regards to VCs, primarily out of the Bay Area, right? So they used to have kind of like a control over the deals. So, you know, they, if you look at tweets from multiple renowned VCs 3 years back, they used to be like, you know, if a startup is 1 hour away by drive from us, you know, we won't invest in them all, right? But with this whole COVID situation, everyone has been forced to go remote. So do you think the West Coast and East Coast will lose their advantage over the deals? And further follow-on question in regards to, do you think that startups from Latin America, Eastern Europe, or other countries, you know, will have a better access to capital now?
I'll first start about within the United States before I start about talk about foreign markets. You know, I think that, you know, I'm from California originally, in New York, London, Tel Aviv, before moving to Tulsa. And you know, most of the investing I had done up until 3 years ago were in those geographies, San Francisco as well. And I think that what's really interesting is, I think COVID has accelerated, you know, things moving remotely. And I think that our ability to, A, you know, founders, you know, we've invested in 4 founders here in Tulsa this year, but 3 of which moved from out of Tulsa, 2 of which, 1 moved from Kansas City, 1 moved from Oklahoma City, 1 moved from Johannesburg. We have another one that's in town actually in our office right now, from Boston. And so, you know, people's attachment to geography, I think, is different. And also, you know, from a hiring perspective, people can hire from anywhere. And so the competitive advantage of some of the network effects that might have come with San Francisco and New York are significantly less relevant, and you still have that kind of cost disadvantage in those markets. So now you're still paying these $250,000 salaries for software engineers in those tier one markets, where you can, you know, you no longer have this, like, you know, interaction and density all in person together where they're remote anyways. And so you're able to get kind of the same caliber of talent, that there's no loss on network effect of being in person for half the cost in a place like Tulsa. And so because of that, you're able to, from an investment perspective, invest at a much more reasonable valuation, because the money you're investing can go much further in terms of hitting milestones. So, you know, it's interesting. We see COVID as a horrible global pandemic, but as it pertains to kind of net winners and net losers, we see San Francisco and New York as a property owner in New York, I've been crushed as huge net losers. And we see places like Tulsa, Denver, Las Vegas, et cetera, as huge networks.
So Ben, your thoughts when it comes, so, you know, last year, September 2019 onwards, you know, the WeWork saga, the WeWork debacle started unfolding. And prior to that, you know, everyone has been rethinking the office space and everything, right? And then COVID happened, right? And especially, you know, like Michael said, that the real estate in New York is getting crushed, right? Especially the commercial one. You know, I kind of like walk every day, and every day retail space is becoming more and more available. So with the transition, do you think from the banking going more and more digital, with the much more commercial real estate becoming available, what do you think, what are your thoughts, you know, what's going to happen with all that vacant real estate, especially in cities like New York or San Francisco?
I'm far from an expert on commercial real estate. However, what I've seen to be true with Tulsa Remote has been, we've seen a tremendous influx in applicants. We've seen 3x the volume this year. We've already brought three times as many people to Tulsa during calendar year 2020 as we did in the whole of 2019. And demand, frankly, is off the charts. And so as people can work from anywhere, as has been well documented over the course of COVID-19, Tulsa has become an outsized beneficiary, and we've also seen demand for studio apartments really significantly increase, as have home sales. So there's really just an unbelievable appetite for people to explore places that are more cost effective and also allow people the flexibility that they desire from a work-life standpoint.
So, Will, in regards to the valuations, the median valuations of the early stage companies, you know, it's 2019, we kind of like peaked at, so the average was in the US was coming down around to $7.5-8 million, right? Then due to early COVID days, it took a hit, right? So with what Michael was saying, you know, with the runways going higher, longer, and with the remote work increasing, do you think we're going to see the peak of the median valuations of 2019, or do you think it's going to surpass that, or is it just going to stay low?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of a tale of two stories. It depends on which sector you're building in. Public valuations have really kind of ballooned in certain sectors and really deflated in others. And so depending on what problem you're solving today in venture, and there are a lot of new problems to solve, depending on that, you know, you could have two completely different stories. But I'm not sure that you know, the problems that we face today through COVID are going to go away, even after assuming that we ever get a vaccine or treatment. So I think that the problems that we face today are structural issues that will have to be resolved over time. And so companies that are investing in that space, I think, will continue to see, you know, appropriately higher valuations, and those that have business models based on, you know, a world that was, you know, just structurally different than it is today are going to have to figure things out. And I think valuations will reflect that.
So Michael, if you were to pick two spaces going forward, you know, for 2021 and 2022, which two spaces would be your top of the list?
Telehealth would definitely be top. You know, it's a huge focus here in Tulsa and also in our portfolio. We've just seen absolute explosion in companies like Roe and Televet, and just in general with evaluations publicly like Teladoc. The telemedicine, would say it's like number one, top of list. You know, Will is actually the former public markets kind of macro secular trend investor. And so I will defer to Will for the second one, because anything I say, he would know better.
And so Mustafa, I'm going to ask you to repeat the question on that.
Which two sectors do you think will have the best tailwinds in COVID world 2020 or 2021?
Yeah. So definitely telehealth is an interesting sector. I think anything that really promotes anything remote related, honestly, it's just a massive trend. People are going out of their house less, and those technologies that consumers are using today, they're expecting the same kind of convenience across sectors. And so anything remote related, honestly, is going to, I think, going to be a really interesting space to invest around.
All right. So Ben, when it comes down to primarily any three productivity hacks, you know, because working from home has been a challenge for everyone, especially, you know, prior to COVID, people used to be like, okay, you're in office, you're working. Once you're back home, you kind of like can switch off your home, right? But work from home, there have been times people have been for like just working 18 hours a day, especially the workaholics, you know. So any three productivity hacks that you figure out on your own that help you navigate through your day better?
Well, I heard one the other day that I really liked, which was make sure you do something to leave your house before you start working. And I do that myself. I go get a coffee every morning. And I think that that does help have a little bit of separation from the start of your day. And I walk my dog at the end of the day, and I'm probably still doing a call when I walk my dog. So I think there is a piece of making the work-life integration happen, because I don't believe in 2020 and beyond we're able to really have that work-life separation that you had in previous years by going into the office. And one thing we've seen is obviously a tremendous trend towards long-term remote work and inflexible work from anywhere types of environments. And so I think everyone has to figure out the tricks that work best for them and their families. And so it's an adjustment process, but everything about this year has been. And we're still all in the process of learning and figuring that out.
Okay. So the next one is for both Will and Michael. I want your thoughts, both of them, on this. And primarily regards to in March, April, when you were sitting down with your existing portfolio companies, right? So some would be in hospitality space, some would be in spaces that are not gonna revive for the next 18 months. So, okay, let's go with Will. So were there spaces that you felt like they won't be able to raise around for the next 18 months or 24 months? So what advice were you giving to them? Let's start with that.
Well, Mustafa, honestly, we were actually sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. And so we were actually kind of early in our capital deployment cycle when COVID hit. And so we kind of had the luxury of selecting companies that we thought would do well during COVID. Yeah. I think some of the tips that we were hearing from fund managers that we were invested in, who were invested in portfolio companies struggling, was really to think about how to generate efficiencies with the business model and to conserve cash and to really be thoughtful about the effects of COVID and how that was going to impact the business. And so really, I think it was a time for people to, it was a very reactive time for companies who were not well positioned. But again, Mustafa, I mean, honestly, we were very lucky that we were early in the capital deployment cycle and made a lot of investments around themes that were kind of COVID related.
Michael, any thoughts on that?
I think Will summated it nicely.
So back to the question that is asked Ben in regards to rethinking the real estate, the commercial real estate, especially since you've been from New York, you know. So what do you think will happen with all the commercial real estate that's been just sitting vacant for 6 months, you know?
I mean, look, I think there'll be a huge bubble. I mean, I think you have forbearance going on currently. I mean, you look at WeWork as a microcosm. You know, 60 New York properties have WeWorks, I recall, which will default. And also, the big corporates will finish off their leases, but they won't re-sign. We're overbuilt. People will not engage with offices in the same way. There will be offices, but they'll be on rotating basis, not on every day of the week, not as many people. Yes, they might be more spread out, so that could help a little bit. But I just think that in general, retail won't work. Retail's, you know, combination of retail and then office will just not have the capacity needed. And so you're just going to see this huge default and correction. I believe I'm very bearish on commercial real estate, and I think that is right now the forbearance has and also for residential really, but the forbearance has really kind of punted it. But it's all going to get it's going to catch up at some point, and so you know. Economy is correct and sectors correct, and I think that correction is upon us.
Ben, Will, Michael, thank you so much for being on the show. I'm pretty sure we could have talked for another half an hour, but you know, we try to keep the episodes between 18 to 20 minutes. Thank you so much for being on the show. Take care of yourself and stay safe.
Thanks for having us.
Much appreciate you.